Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're looking forward to a game against the defending Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens this upcoming weekend. To take a look forward to that game and take a look back at the last game, we have joining us as we do every Wednesday here at Railbird Central, we have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. How about you, Brian?
Very good. A lot of news to get to. The Packers have lost Clay Matthews for a month, about four games. Who knows? Maybe more. And what's interesting, Nathan, the last time we talked, we kind of discussed Clay Matthews' replacements, or who will be replacing him now, Mike Neal, Nick Perry. They weren't generating a whole lot of pass rush at the time. But you know what? I was pretty encouraged by their play against the Lions this past week, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they both had very good games. Mike Neal had one sack and five hurries. Nick Perry had two sacks and four hurries. So six pressures for each of them. Neal also had a good game in their run against run defense as well. And it came up, a lot of it came up against the Lions' left tackle, Riley Reiss, who's the better of the two tackles in Detroit. So that was also encouraging. So I could see over the next month or so, it could very well depend on the tackles that they're going up against, how successful they are. And looking at the schedule over the next month, some teams are weak at offensive tackle, some teams are a little better. So I think it'll just be a week-to-week thing how much success we see with them pass rushing.
Now, can the Packers get a pass rush from anywhere else on the team? You know, with Clay Matthews out, that might be important, generating a more consistent pass rush. How are the defensive linemen on the Packers doing in applying pressure this year?
So far, not very much pressure. So Mike Daniels is leading the defensive line in pressure. He has one sack and three hurries on the year, which really isn't very much. Everyone else has less than that. The only other one that I could see really getting a lot of pressure is B.J. Raji, since he and Spurts will get a lot of pressure over the course of games. We've seen that throughout his career. It just hasn't happened yet this year. So that's something that could happen. And then outside of the defensive line, when the Packers blitz with their two inside linebackers, they've seemed to have a lot of success regardless of who's playing there. So that's another way that the Packers could be getting more practice features if they blitz with their inside linebackers more and putting their outside linebackers to coverage a little bit more.
We're getting a little bit of in and out with your audio here, Nathan, but hopefully we'll fix it as time goes on here. Maybe not in terms of pressure, but the Packers have gotten a good performance from Morgan Burnett, his first game back this last week against the Lions. How do you think he performed in his season debut?
I would agree with you there. He played very well. He had one great play at the end of the third quarter where the Lions were throwing deep into the end zone and Morgan Burnett was able to deflect the ball away, which was a touchdown-saving play. And then outside of that, he was fairly invisible, which is what you want out of a safety, is every so often make a good play and then not be noticed for doing anything bad.
That sounded much better, so that's good. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. Let's turn to the offensive side of the football. The Packers have three running backs who have now run for 100 yards, or at least almost 100 yards. Eddie Lacy was only 1 yard short of 100 this past game against the Lions. But what I want to know here, Nathan, is, who's the best option going forward for the Packers?
So far, none of them have really emerged as the clear number one guy. Jonathan Franklin is the only one who has shown some problems with fumbling twice in a 16 series. So if he can fix his fumbling problem, he's been doing just as well as the other two, Starks and Lacy. I know Starks has a higher yards per carry, but that's in large part due to his 32-yard run that he had. So if you take that out, him and Lacy have been very evenly matched so far. And then even when you look at the passing game, neither of the players have made much of an impact as a receiver, but then none of them have really had any problems in pass protection. So I could see it very much being a running back by committee if they're all healthy. I'm going with whoever has the hot hand at the moment.
Fair enough, but certainly health will have a lot to do with it. James Starks currently out with a knee injury. We'll see how he plays in practice going forward. Let's talk about the guys opening up holes for the running backs. How would you classify the performance of the offensive line since the first game of the season? It seems like they've been trending upward ever since that point.
In general, the offensive line has done a very good job. Looking at both the guards, they both had a rough week one, like you said, and then since then they've been playing very well. In our PFF rating system, both of them rank in the top 16 in terms of guards, so both of them are amongst the better guards in the league. Don Barclay had his worst game of the year against the Lions, mostly due to run blocking against Willie Young and Israel Adonijé, but outside of that, he's still been having a good year. Evan Dedrick Smith picked up where he left off last year, playing a little above average in both pass blocking and run blocking, which leaves their biggest weakness being David Bakhtiari, who has been negatively graded in three of his four games so far. But in general, I would say they're in better shape than they were last year in the offensive line.
Hopefully, you just hope a rookie continues to improve and those grades will get better. I want to know here, Nathan, is there any all-purpose players in the NFL as valuable as Randall Cobb? I mean, for all the things he does as a receiver, we saw it against the Lions as a running back, taking a rush 60-plus yards. He returns kicks and punts. Is there any all-purpose player better than Randall Cobb?
At this point, I couldn't find one that I could argue is better at Cobb at the moment. He ranks in the top 20 in terms of our PFF pass rating. He's in the top 15 in terms of our block rating because Cobb has also done really well as a screen blocker so far this year on that limited sample size. And then he has the most rushing yards out of all wide receivers, and we know he can return when he gets the opportunity. So the only one I could see possibly challenging him as the season goes on is Percy Harvin in Seattle once he returns from injury.
He hasn't even played yet, I don't think. So Cobb has the title for the moment being. Kind of in the same vein here, talking about with the influence of special teams here, where does Mason Crosby rank among all NFL kickers right now? Is he at the very top after going 5-for-5 this past Sunday against the Lions and a perfect 9-for-9 on the season?
He ranks pretty high, but there are kickers who rank higher than him. Just looking at field goals, taking out kickoffs because Crosby isn't doing kickoffs this year. The only reason for that is that some kickers have had more opportunities or more difficult opportunities. For example, Matt Prater of the Broncos ranks higher, and that's just because he's also 9-for-9 with field goals. But most of his field goals have been from 40 yards or beyond. 8 of his 9 are, which are more difficult field goals to make, where Crosby's only 4 of his 9 have been from beyond 40 yards. So even though Crosby's been perfect so far, he hasn't done anything to receive any sort of negative grades. It's just that some kickers have had more opportunities or more difficult opportunities. Off the top of my head, there are 7 other kickers so far that haven't missed a kick yet either.
Probably doesn't hurt that a guy like Matt Prater kicks in the thin air in Denver, so that could influence it maybe a little, but Mason Crosby doing good nonetheless. What hope is there left for Matt Flynn after he's been cut by the Raiders, either with the Packers or elsewhere, wherever he ends up? I mean, what has Pro Football Focus made of Matt Flynn in the past year or even two?
I think he definitely deserves a job as a backup quarterback somewhere. I don't think he'll be fighting for a starting job anytime soon. but I could very well see him getting some sort of backup job. His big problem is that when he is under pressure, he is not very good and takes a lot of sacks. And when he's not under pressure, he can be a decent quarterback. With the Packers, in his game against the Lions, he was sacked 5 times on the 15 times he was under pressure. So even though he did really well in his one Packers start, when he was under pressure, he still wasn't doing well. It was just the offensive line was playing really well. Then in his one start with Oakland, he was again sacked 7 times on his 17 plays under pressure. So really, he's taking a lot of sacks. In Seattle, he lost his job to Russell Wilson, which is understandable with how well Russell Wilson played. And then in Oakland, he lost it to Pryor, who's the big reason why is Pryor is better at making plays out of nowhere under pressure. So even though he's lost the job a couple of times, he's lost it for decent enough reasons, and Flynn can still be a good quarterback if there's an offensive line in front of him. So I could see him getting a job somewhere, and as for with the Packers, I think I would prefer Flynn over Wallace as the backup quarterback, but I could also see the Packers not wanting to make a change on midseason and trying to teach Flynn everything that they've changed over the past couple years.
That is really interesting about the protection ahead of him. Makes me feel a little bit better about Matt Flynn, and maybe that it's not all his fault, as I think some people have intimated. But anyway, the Packers have a game this upcoming weekend against the Baltimore Ravens. They travel to the defending Super Bowl champions. Can you just tell me a little bit about the Ravens and what the Packers maybe have to look forward to here?
Yeah, the Ravens have had a really weird year so far. Their defense has been really good with a lot of their new players, and then their offense has basically completely fallen apart. The Ravens' offensive line has been a mess this year, so I could see the Packers being able to get a lot of pressure, doing a solid job in run defense. Their only threat on offense has been Torrey Smith, which as long as the Packers can scheme well enough to stop Smith, they shouldn't have much of a problem. They haven't been able to get much of a run game, in large part due to that offensive line not giving them much help. On defense, the Ravens have a good run defense, so I could see the Packers, regardless of who's in at running back, struggling there. And then Alvis Dumervil and Terrell Suggs have been doing a really good job pass rushing together. So they should be able to get some pressure on Aaron Rodgers. But the Ravens have weakness on defense for the cornerbacks outside of Ladarius Webb. So Webb could be playing in the outside. He could be playing in the slot. He's been doing a little bit of both so far this year. So two of the three wide receivers for the Packers should be having a decent game. And I think as long as they make a couple big plays with those wide receivers, the Packers should be able to score enough points to outscore the little points the Ravens will be getting on offense.
Very good. That's just what Packers fans wanted to hear, I'm sure. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us here after taking a week off for the bye. We're glad to have you back on the show, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Sounds good. Talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Railbird Central, as he does every Wednesday, except for the bye week. We gave him a week off, but every Wednesday here at Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. Glad to have him. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as we kind of continue our discussion here. It's been a busy 2 days since we were last on air on Monday. Plenty to talk about. The big news is the loss of Clay Matthews. Broke his thumb during the Lions game and had surgery on Monday. The Packers wasting no time to get that done. As I have found out, both through the reporting of Pete Doherty of the Green Bay Press Gazette, also through a friend of my own, that just kind of learning a little bit more about this injury. It's kind of interesting, the immediate backlash on social media, Twitter especially, to news that Clay Matthews would be lost for approximately a month. I've seen people say he can't play through a broken thumb. Come on. I mean, be tough. It's only a broken thumb. And I just have to sit there and shake my head a little bit at people who say this. I mean, like, Give me a break. And as you read more about it and find out more about it, and if you're the person out there criticizing Clay Matthews, read up on what a Bennett fracture is and why it's necessary to have surgery and take care of this. As I understand it, you know, the Bennett fracture is at the base of the thumb. And you need surgery for it to heal properly, because if it doesn't, I mean it could impact not just how you play football, but your quality of life and dexterity and things like that. And that's why it's so important for the Packers to take care of this right now. And you know, as you've learned from people like Jay Glazer has been kind of keeping people updated on Twitter a little bit, the reporter from Fox, about Clay Matthews' surgery, in that he had pins inserted to, you know, during the surgery to help the healing, things like that. Of course, Jay Glazer has a close relationship with Clay Matthews because they practice MMA together during the off season, as Jay Glazer does with many NFL athletes out there, and they're as a way for to keep in shape and work out certain muscle groups, new muscle groups during the off season, things like that. Anyway, Clay Matthews has pins inserted, and you know, as I understand it, they'll be in for like a month, and then they'll be taken out, those pins. So you know, you're looking at Clay Matthews probably missing at least four games here, and then they're probably going to analyze, once those pins get taken out, how the healing is, and it'll be kind of interesting at that point whether he'll miss that or any more. But at that point, after about a month or so, you know, they can possibly let him go and put a club cast on in the meantime. So I mean, it's very possible he misses just four games and the Packers move on. I'm not guaranteeing that, but it is very possible for you know, anybody who's saying, he's going to miss the season. Well, not so fast. It probably not. Now is everything going to be hunky-dory? I'm not sure about that, because he's very likely you're going to see him at least for some time wear that club cast. And you know, that isn't exactly a good thing. I mean, you can play with it, but are you the same player without it? I mean, it would certainly be hard for Clay Matthews to grab any interceptions with that cast on, but, you know, to be fair, and what's good is that he's not asked to do that all that often. He can still, you know, stuff the run and get some pressure on the quarterback, which are his primary responsibilities, so from that perspective, that's all good. You know, how do the Packers, you know, live without him? They're going to rely a lot, as we talked with Nathan Yonke of Pro Football Focus, going to rely upon especially Mike Neal and Nick Perry. And those two guys had kind of been splitting time opposite Clay Matthews at the other outside linebacker position. They've kind of been splitting time, and now they're both going to be full-time players, pretty much. I mean, yeah, you might start to see rookies Andy Malumba and Nate Palmer get a little bit more playing time now, but for the most part, they're going to be relying on two guys, these two guys, a whole lot more. And you know, last year, Clay Matthews was lost for a month with a hamstring injury. Didn't play in four full games last year. And you know what? The Packers went 3-1 without Clay Matthews. And you know, I mean, think about this for a second. Think about who the replacements for Clay Matthews were a year ago. Think about this for a second. When Clay Matthews went out in 2012, had to miss four games, the outside linebackers on that team were Eric Walden and Desmond Moses, undrafted players. And now look who's replacing Clay Matthews or who the outside linebackers are while he's gone. You've got Nick Perry, a first-round draft choice in 2012, and you've got Mike Neal, a second-round draft choice in, what was it, 2010? You know, I'm feeling a whole lot better about the Packers situation and outside linebacker with those guys as opposed to the guys they had last year. And it makes me only feel better that they seem to be trending upward. It, you know, given the transition Mike Neal has had to go through to become an outside linebacker, and pretty much he's only been doing it for a few months since this offseason, I think it's almost remarkable what he's been able to do, and I think he's doing a pretty good job doing it. And Nick Perry, I mean, some people I think were getting a little irritated that, you know, how slow it's been for him since coming into the league last year. But, I mean, you do have to realize he only played in four games his rookie year, Nick Perry did. So he hasn't played a whole lot. Even then, he didn't play a whole lot that first game or two as a rookie. And then early on the season, he didn't really do a whole lot. And then it started to click last week. You saw Nick Perry get two sacks this past week and force a fumble, albeit the Packers didn't recover it. All of a sudden, now it's starting to look good, a whole lot better for the Packers. That these guys can get the job done and maybe even, you know, be pretty good in doing so. I don't know if they're Pro Bowl good or anything like that, but who knows? Maybe they are. You know, with a guy like Nick Perry, he's so young that all of a sudden he could just turn it on big time. He could. Not guaranteeing it, but he could. The possibility is there for him to just break out big time. And really, Mike Neal, too. I mean, he's still young enough where Mike Neal's basically in the physical peak of his career, you know, in year four in the NFL. And, of course, Mike Neal is in a contract year. He wants to do good, so he makes some big money in free agency. Or even if the Packers don't let him reach free agency, he's making big money nonetheless. I mean, his play depends upon it. His pocketbook depends upon it. So there's that. I mean, let's take a look at the next four games the Packers have. We've already discussed with Nate Yonke this upcoming game. They travel to Baltimore this upcoming week. After that, the Packers host the Cleveland Browns, a much improved Cleveland Browns team, no doubt about it. But at least it's at home at Lambeau Field, where the Packers have won, what, 23 of their past 24 regular season games? You feel good about the Packers at home no matter who they're playing at this point. Then they play the Minnesota Vikings on the road in Sunday Night Football, October 27th, against a Vikings team that appears to have regressed from last year, but no doubt dangerous with Adrian Peterson and an offense that is still scoring at a pretty good clip nonetheless. And then finally, November 4th, Monday Night Football against the Chicago Bears again at Lambeau Field. That is the next four games for the Green Bay Packers. How do they do in those four games? Man, I think if the Packers can duplicate what they did a year ago, when the four games Clay Matthews missed last year, the Packers went 3-1. If they can go 3-1 through this four-game stretch, basically the second quarter of their football schedule, that would be fantastic. That would be great if they could do that. And I see no reason that they can't, really. They should be able to. I mean, even if they go 2-2 during that stretch, let's say they win the two home games, lose the two road games. I mean, does it really matter where the losses come from? If they go 2-2, I mean, they would still be 4-4 at the league's halfway point and still be plenty much alive. And then you got to feel pretty good no matter what in the second half of the season that if Clay Matthews is back, Then all of a sudden they'd be able to go on a run and string together some wins. Mike Levenowicz on the live blog says, I'm thinking 4-0, got to start picking up momentum. Hey, more power to the Packers if they can go 4-0 through this stretch without Clay. If the Packers go 4-0 without Clay Matthews, then they're for real. You know this team is going to compete for a Super Bowl potentially if the Packers can go 4-0 through their next four games. I'm all about that. But by all means, please, Packers, go 4-0, and we can all rejoice and be overconfident in ourselves, probably. But there are worse things than losing Clay Matthews for four games. Now again, it's all about how long will he be lost? Is it going to be four games, or will it linger and end up being five, six? You know, we saw it with Casey Hayward, and we can kind of transition into this discussion as well. Casey Hayward, people kind of thought, well, he's just going to be out through the bye with his hamstring injury. Well, it ended up lingering a week past the bye. And now we're at the point wondering, does he come back today? Packers returned to the practice field today after Tuesday, their usual day off. So we're going to see where Casey Hayward is at today. And kind of waiting on the guys with hamstring injuries. Once again, the hamstring coming back to bite the Packers. But wondering where he's at, wondering where linebacker Brad Jones is at as they return from their respective injuries. Casey Hayward actually practiced last week despite not playing. So maybe that's a good sign that he'll be ready to go this week. Maybe he'll be ready to go and help the Packers defense out. I asked it on Twitter on Monday, actually, just kind of thinking out loud. Assuming Casey Hayward is back and healthy, how do you divvy up snaps between him, Tremont Williams, and Devon House? I mean, you have to assume at this point, Sam Shields is a three-down player, right? I think he is. I think he is. So how do you divvy up snaps between Hayward, Tremont Williams, and Devon House? I'm not sure how you do it. I really don't. I think there might be some sort of timeshare, as maybe they would just want to ease Casey Hayward back into action. So maybe from time to time, they could take Casey Hayward out and give him a breather, and Tremont Williams can play the slot for the time being. I think that could be the case there. But, as far as when he's totally healthy and Casey Hayward, I think, can be a three-down player. He's going to be the slot cornerback, so he probably won't play in their base defense. But anyway, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it all plays out. No doubt about it. I'm not sure how the Packers divvy up snaps there. It'll be interesting to see what they do. And it'll be interesting to see where Brad Jones is in his recovery. You got to think that the Packers don't think Brad Jones' injury is going to be too bad. Maybe he misses this week or things like that, but I think they feel as if they can get by for a week with what they have. You know, they have A.J. Hawk, obviously, who's coming off his, no doubt about it, he's coming off the best game of the season against the Lions. Great job, A.J. Hawk. He deserves credit for a very good game against the Lions last week. But it looks for the time being with Rob Francois now lost for the season. He's been placed on injured reserve. The Packers looking at Jamari Lattimore starting across from A.J. Hawk or with A.J. Hawk at the inside linebacker positions. And you've got Sam Barrington still in reserve if need be. So that's what the Packers have there at inside linebacker. And God forbid they suffer two more injuries there. They can always switch to a dime defense if they really had to and get by with only one inside linebacker on the field. But, I think they think that, you know, Brad Jones isn't going to be lost for long. Isn't going to be lost for, you know, too long. I don't know if he comes back today and is practicing. You got to think at least this week of practice, they take it easy with them and be careful. It was bad enough that he came out of the game and didn't return this past Sunday. But we'll find out. We'll get an update today. Mike McCarthy will kind of address injuries during his Wednesday press conference this afternoon, 1:10 p.m. Central Time, in which he'll do that. And you know, I just wanted to end today on a discussion on Matt Flynn. I think the Packers should go out and sign Matt Flynn. They shouldn't hesitate if he's healthy. Now the news is, since we last talked, the Raiders have released Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn is free to sign anywhere he wants. He's not subject to waivers as a vested veteran in the NFL. So he can sign wherever he wants. And you know, you would have to think the Packers would be interested. You know, I think people have criticized Matt Flynn as being a system quarterback. It was the system that made him look so good in that record-breaking performance that he had against the Lions, what was it, two seasons ago in 2011, where he threw for over 400 yards and had a bunch of touchdowns and had arguably one of the single best performances in Packers franchise history among at the quarterback position. For a team that's had a lot of good quarterbacks between Bart Starr, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers, pretty impressive. Well, you know what? If Matt Flynn is a system quarterback, bring him back to the system he has success in, by all means. I think he's a better option than Seneca Wallace. I really do. I mean, here's the kicker, though. Ed Werder of ESPN came out with a. It was just a tweet. It wasn't even a report, but he said Matt Flynn is still dealing with an elbow injury, and that's maybe a reason the Packers have reluctance. And I guess I mean, if that's the case, and I don't know much about Matt Flynn's injury situation right now, admittedly. I mean, if he's dealing with that, and that's part of the reason maybe he didn't see much success in Oakland or didn't, you know, wasn't able to mount much of a challenge to Russell Wilson out in Seattle. You probably should back away from a player with injury issues, I guess. But man, if Matt Flynn was healthy, I'm all about signing him because it's not going to take much. I don't think he's being looked at as a starter anywhere. Maybe as a stopgap starter. I don't really know. I mean, there are teams out there that are having injury issues like the Buffalo Bills. I know EJ Manuel suffered an injury there, their first-round quarterback, and they're struggling to find a fill-in starter. I think they looked to Thad Lewis from their practice squad to take over the position for the time being. I don't know if Matt Flynn's an option out there. That might be a case where he'll get a look as a fill-in starter. But even I don't know how quickly Matt Flynn could get picked up on an offense, you know, and be able to play in 1 week. I mean, that's tough. that's really tough. But I mean, if he's going to be looked at as a backup quarterback now, and I don't see how he's looked at as a starter, at least any more than an emergency starter anywhere. I mean, why wouldn't he want to come back and back up Aaron Rodgers? I mean, that's a great place to be for a backup. If you're relegated to being a backup, I mean. You're there, and it just wasn't that Lions game to me with Matt Flynn. To me, you saw it during that one game during the Super Bowl season in 2010 when Aaron Rodgers had to miss with a concussion. Flynn started in place of Rodgers against the New England Patriots on the road, and although the Packers lost that game, Matt Flynn gave them a chance to win. He gave them a chance to win that game, and they played really well on the road at New England in one of the toughest environments in the entire NFL. And that's a two-game sample size for me to see Matt Flynn is able to keep the Packers afloat at least. And that's all you want from a backup quarterback. Keep the Packers in games. Keep them in games. And he's shown to do that. And beyond that, I suppose you cannot put much stock into preseason play, but let's just compare what Matt Flynn did in the preseason with the Packers compared to what you saw this preseason from guys like Graham Harrell and B.J. Coleman and Vince Young. You saw absolute ineptitude from Graham Harrell, B.J. Coleman, and Vince Young during this preseason, where I was able to watch 4 years of Matt Flynn in the preseason, and maybe he didn't set the world on fire, but he never looked as bad as those guys in preseason play. I mean, all of a sudden, the sample size is starting to get bigger and bigger, and I have a whole lot. I got a lot of faith in Matt Flynn. I think he's a better option than Seneca Wallace. That's me. He's got to be healthy for the Packers to sign him, no doubt about it. But if he is, go do it. Go sign him. It's not going to cost anything anymore. He's not going to get much money from any other team in the NFL at this point. Heck, he's guaranteed millions of dollars from the Oakland Raiders. It's amazing how much money they paid him for, you know, cutting him, how much guaranteed money he got. Matt Flynn is set. Oh, anyway, that'll do it on a Wednesday morning here at Real Bird Central. Glad to have you join us. I didn't get into a discussion about last night's front line. Investigative reporting on the League of Denial. I watched it last night. Was a great, great piece of investigative journalism, I thought. Who knows? Maybe at some point we'll talk more about that at a later point, because I do have some thoughts on it. But for the time being, we'll be back on Friday here at Railbird Central. We'll talk to you later, folks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirivu. Make sure to join us every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Cheesehead TV, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. We'll see you, folks. I leave you today with a song called Liquid by Umphreys McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go. Change.